AG's office on concerns, clarities, and questions that we have asked. I will then hand over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, honourable members. Yeah, certainly there were some tough questions in the questions. We appreciate the robustness with which, within which the presentation is being dealt with. I will do just a couple of overarching comments, of which one I will start off by maybe giving some context and some background with regard to the process. And then also, Chairperson, maybe before we get started with that, there have also been a number of questions which have been asked which really should be maybe directed or basically to be answered by the departments in terms of how certain things are going to be done. And we also don't want to be prescriptive to the portfolio committee. Ours is to report. We've empowered you, we've given you the report. Take out the report and ask those difficult questions also to the departments in terms of their accounting role and responsibility. But then also, Chairperson, I'm not going to leave you in the lurch. We are going to attempt to answer most of these questions to the best of our ability. And like I said, we'll start off with the overall process, which will also partly cover Mr. Masalela, Honorable Masalela's comments. Chairperson, you would recall that when we did the introduction with regard to the sector process, we said it's part of the regularity audit, so it's not a standalone audit. So the provincial guys who maybe is responsible for Free State, when they are doing the normal PFMA audit of the financial statements, they just delve a little bit deeper into this process. So we just enhance that process. Now, you recall that process is regulated that they must give us financial statements 31 May, then we audit, we give audit report 31 July, and then we give you the BRRR process after the tabling. Remember, after they have tabled also in about October. So it's also driven by those processes, but from this particular sector report point of view, the additional stuff that we wanted to highlight or escalate to this level, Chairperson, also require a level of further engagement over and above the normal, you know, your book balance that you get a financial and qualified audit. So require an extra level of engagement, extra level of robustness to make sure that we are all in agreement with management. So there's consultation that happens, meetings that happen over and above the normal audit process to make sure that by the time we do the tabling, that the information is credible and accurate and complete and it's factual. So that's why if you look at the BRRR process, it's October, and you see this report is immediately done in November, just close to the tabling date. So it's driven by the preceding processes and then only. So getting it before the October process would be somewhat challenging for those reasons, because we have to allow the other tabling process to take place first. And then, Chairperson, also linked to Honorable Masalela's question, and I'm in no way favoring you because you went last and I'm addressing these questions first. You just asked a lot of questions with regard to procedure and process. The question Honorable Masalela asked, and that will also tie in with the comments Chairperson made, that relates to the 15-16 report. So we have a 15-16 report, but we've been saying in the report that we are saying that we have been doing something over the past 3, 4, 5 years. Where are those reports? And then ultimately, what has been happening in the interim? I'll make a global statement, although Chairperson said, you know, November to February, I'll just ask, I'll relate it to say what has been happening from when we have been doing this to give feedback in that regard. The first matter was the tabling of the 15-16 report vis-a-vis the other reports. We actually did table the 13-14 report. It was, I think, tabled or discussed in the September meeting of 2015. And then last year we didn't have a standalone report for the 14-15 financial year. We didn't have a standalone report. We combined it as part of our general report, which is the one where the AEG gives the consolidated outcomes of PFMA. And you would remember, Chairperson, also, like I said earlier, or alluded to earlier, this process is an extension of the normal regularity audit process, the PFMA process. So in that year, we consolidated the findings as part of the GR. So it wasn't a standalone report. Now, to partly answer the follow-up question of then what has been happening in the interim, that is also precisely why we engaged in the process of now tabling, formally tabling this, what is a separate issue, so that it can enjoy the attention that it deserves. Because you would agree GR, the hype will be about the GR, the earth outcomes, and the message potentially diluted and missed. And for that reason also, we felt that by elevating it and tabling it, it will obtain the necessary attention for follow-up actions. And that's also prompted by the fact that, like Honorable Mahalela said, some matters like the IT colleague and the infrastructure and the medical equipment colleagues have explained have been recurring findings. So you'll see throughout the slide, the red one where we have a province and the finding there means it's a recurring finding from the previous year or the year before that. So in that sense, it should give you as a committee some form of indication that there has been a lack of traction on those areas, which then require real robust engagement with management to understand the real root causes of why really we're not making progress in addressing those issues. So there's an element of elevating it and saying please give it the necessary attention, but then also saying over the years we have been reporting it and hence we are elevating it. So we can see a trend of, you see the root causes as we mentioned, saying a lack of progress, a lack of commitment from some of the key role players in this space that must make sure that these issues are getting addressed. So that was just with regard to overall the processes. I'm going to hand over to my colleagues now who do respond to some of the findings, and I hope you don't mind if maybe somebody said something and another colleague jumps in just to make sure that we are covering each other's best without prolonging the feedback session too much. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to start with Jolene, and then once Jolene has responded, we're going to move over to the medical equipment, all medical equipment or medical equipment related questions will be answered by Ms. Marika Sneijhans. All infrastructure questions as per the norm that we've been presenting will be answered by Mr. Semi, and Ms. Madondo will do the IT one.
Thank you, Chair. Before I talk about medical waste, there were a couple of questions that I just want to comment on. There was a comment on the national health insurance, the IT systems, and the importance of having or addressing the findings that we've raised. And I just wanted to just, and we've included it in the report, but in terms of the context of how we selected these focus areas, while we don't focus on the national health insurance, I think that we've tried to focus on what are the key pillars impacting on the priorities of government, and especially the NHI, which is also a priority of government. So we have issues on IT specifically, we are saying that it's significantly impacting the ability of the sector to be able to implement national health insurance successfully. I think we hear the comments on the seriousness of the IT findings specifically, and I think we share that concern, and we're hoping that we're getting that message across on the slow progress in achieving that, and that this is critical and fundamental to the success of any NHI fund that will be established at a later stage. One of the members also spoke to the importance of making sure that you have systems that talk to each other across the provinces. I mean, that's going to be fundamental if you're going to have an NHI fund that needs information from all of these. Pharmaceutical systems, billing and revenue systems, again, fundamental in achieving the objectives of the NHI. So we hear you with that, and we're hoping that this will help the department to refocus its efforts in terms of IT specifically. There was also a question around internal audits in the provinces and are they effective. This is an area that as a sector we've looked at a few years ago, and I can't remember whether we brought it back to this committee as one of the risks that we've had, but in analyzing the internal audit units across the provinces, I think our finding was that some of the provinces did not have adequate capacity, mainly because they were using internal audit from the provincial treasuries. Unfortunately, we have not since done a detailed analysis of internal audit currently, so we're not able to comment on what the current situation is. But I think in us assessing the root causes of the findings, we have we haven't included internal audit as a key aspect that needs to be addressed, because the fundamental issues that we've raised more relate to leadership and what is leadership going to do to address this, and then we believe that internal audit will then come thereafter. I think from my side, I'd just like to then acknowledge comments made on medical waste, that the performance audit, the department has indicated a performance audit will be done. I think as part of our audit process, we will continue to follow up on the recommendations that we made. We said we will track it now with the National Health Council, so we will continue to follow up to see what progress management is making in terms of that. And we also take note of the comment that was made around the strengthening of the monitoring controls in place over waste management, and again, that's something that we intend to track to see that management is implementing in respect of healthcare waste. And those are the two questions that I noted.
Thank you, Chair and members. With regards to the medical equipment, the overall picture, how does these things come together? Just to give a little bit of background, at each hospital, there's a committee responsible for equipment, amongst other things. They need to discuss equipment. And annually, they need to plan for their medical equipment, how they're going to procure it, and how they're going to maintain it. When they get to these committees, they need to discuss everything in terms of planning, how they will use it, and how they monitor and evaluate it at the end of the day. What is crucial in terms of this? The financial people needs to be there in terms of the budget. Your HR people needs to be there to make sure that the people are there to do the work. Supply chain management people needs to be there. So when they need to procure that, it's done at a specific point in time. The clinical engineering departments need to be there so that they can specifically say what is their need on the ground, and it must get to that specific level. Then they need to compile a maintenance plan or a procurement plan, all of them together, and what is the real need for the hospital. Service delivery at the end of the day is crucial, so they must make sure all equipment is maintained and is in place to deliver services at the end of the day, while we are still sitting in a situation where they are not properly prioritizing what is next in terms of procurement and maintenance. So bringing all of that together, they need to plan properly, then they need to execute in terms of procurement and maintenance, and at the end of the day, it's the monitoring and evaluation. After the plan, there should specifically be steps how people are held accountable. Did you do your planning? Okay, now it's procured. Each step of the way, there should be proper monitoring and evaluation and keeping those people accountable for the specific jobs that they need to do in that process. Then in terms of the lack of standard contracts, we didn't specifically look at it, but I know some of the provinces are starting with it. For example, Gauteng has started with it, where they have a standardized contract, just like in pharmaceuticals, a national contract at a specific level, where all the hospitals, they don't have to go through a particular tender process to do procurement. And that is why, for example, the Gauteng department indicated that they will follow the tender process, and the hospitals can just procure through that tender, and that is saving a lot of time, and it is making the delays in terms of the procurement of equipment definitely shorter, so that is working. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to try and address the three questions that I picked up under infrastructure to the best of my ability. The first one was with regard to the MDR ward. And the question was, where were the patients relocated to? Remember, as part of our audit, we were very much restricted to looking at the infrastructure specifically and, you know, utilization or underutilization thereof. You know, and the question gets asked when we find a facility that is underutilized or not utilized, to say, but aren't we supposed to be having patients in there? But one of the things that we picked up, obviously, was the temperature control in the whole ward. We battled also to breathe properly and focus. And we were made aware that, you know, because of the situation with mechanical ventilation and air conditioning system, they had to remove the patients from there and move them elsewhere. They probably relocated them to another facility within the province, but the details were not provided to us. So the concern was that obviously there must have been an engineering solution that was provided within the 18 months. 18 months is far too long. I mean, you know, it will take you 18 months to build a new facility, let alone just fix mechanical installation like, you know, a ventilation system or aircon. The second question, I think they were almost linked. They were talking to the whole issue of the maintenance of infrastructure and how the needs determination actually was the needs analysis and need determination was arrived at. With regards to maintenance of equipment, you know, I'll take you back to the statement that I made earlier around the asset management plans. All the facilities or the use of the facilities have to do an asset management plan. Now, the details of that asset management plan actually includes a breakdown of all their maintenance needs, and they profile maintenance in various ways. They would have routine maintenance, would have scheduled maintenance, and all of that. When you look at all those schedules, one of the things that we require as auditors is the breakdown of the number to justify. If I see a figure of 1 million rand allocated for routine maintenance, we need a breakdown. We need to understand what is it that you're going to use it on, and what was the basis of arriving at that number, because maintenance activities also involve expenditure linked to that. Now, we realized a lot of them were based on FAMSAC figures. And they did confess in some provinces that, look, we don't have technical personnel that would go out there and do proper needs determination. We have like your maintenance supervisors, people that are not technically trained to go and do a proper technical condition assessment of this facility and come back and report back to us that, you know, this is what we need and we can execute it over a particular period of time. So this is what we meant when we said there were deficiencies in their needs determination with regards to maintenance as well. They could not back up all the needs that were captured in the user asset management plan. Incomplete as they were, those user asset management plan, the numbers that were in there were not even justifiable, and even the activities. And I think the same applies to some of the project infrastructure needs, not maintenance. There was a question asked about the role of the implementing agent and the department. Now, the department, I think part of the problem also that we picked up is that the department, in most cases, they would think that by delegating the responsibility to the implementing agent, they divorce themselves from that oversight role and making sure that they adequately equipped people with the requisite skills would be there to provide that oversight and making sure that they get proper reports from the implementing agent and they're always aware of what is happening on the ground. This is the gap that we also picked up, that a lot of things would go wrong with the implementing agent and there's no proper reporting mechanism to make sure that that information, you know, goes back to the department. Monies would be allocated to the implementing agent. They would go use their own procurement processes to procure the services of service providers, professional service providers, including contractors, within the prescript of PFMA, of course. But when it comes to actual project monitoring and control, we find that, you know, they don't get regular reporting, you know, progress reporting, as well as, you know, reporting on issues of quality, and so that the department can know what interventions would be needed before project reaches completion stage. Now, the gap that we picked up, and it's a question that was raised by the honourable member, is that at completion stage, what happens? Who's responsible for what? Public Works comes in and say, but the department says, but it's Public Works' responsibility. Now, legislation is very clear. The GIAMA Act is very clear around what the role of a user department like Department of Health would be at a provincial level and the custodian department. The problem is that the two departments do not work hand in hand in most cases to make sure that at completion of the project there's that seamless handover of responsibilities at the point where the project is completed. For example, the user asset management plan that the Department of Health would compile talks to issues that Public Works as a custodian need to pick up on. There needs to be proper information like the as-built drawing that tells you exactly, as I said earlier, tells you exactly what type of facility is built, what is the specification that goes in there, what is the maintenance regime that you need to implement for you to utilize the asset over its entire useful life. Now, the process is not properly managed, and I think this is where the National Department of Public Works needs to come in, because they are responsible for providing that regulatory framework around the process of handing over of facility. Because, you know, health would say, but I've built the facility, this is where my role ends. Public is supposed to pick it up, but you know, nobody says sit in one room and do that. So there is that gap that is there. And unfortunately, as HGU, we do not have an answer, but we have identified that gap. And we started promoting dialogue between National Public Works and, for example, I'll just use another example, Department of Higher Education. Higher Education says we don't have infrastructure people, we employ consultants, but we understand that at the end, these facilities need to be handed over. The TVET colleges that they're building now, they need to be handed over to the users. And we're saying, but there is that gap. The two departments, this is the whole issue of intergovernmental relations, you know, and it needs to be escalated and elevated to that level for somebody to pick it up and make sure that, you know, the responsibilities are discussed by both parties. Yes. I'm not too sure if I covered all the questions. According to my notes, I did. You'll remind me, colleague, if there's anything that I left out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The concerns and the questions with regards to IT kind of talk to each other. There's a concern that we have many pharmaceutical systems and billing and revenue systems used at facilities in the provinces. And then the other issue was, what's the root cause with regards to connectivity? Why are we still having challenges with connectivity? And then the last question was, what's the role of CETA with regards to all of this? To answer this basically, and I think that's the role of e-health strategy, we just need to go back to basics. We just need to make sure that we have the IT infrastructure that is working. So if you can have the IT infrastructure that is working and is upgraded, we can make sure that the systems that we are having, whether it's one system or different system, they can connect. So the question that was asked, well, what's the root cause? When you speak to the departments and you go to facilities, the biggest challenge that they're having currently is the budget, because they need to make sure that they have new broadbands implemented. So they're saying they don't have budget available to do that. So that's why we still have challenges with regards to connectivity. Again, if we can make sure we have this network infrastructure that's working, the systems that we having can talk to each other, even from pharmaceutical perspective. If the infrastructure is there, connectivity will be sorted. Okay. And then the question with regards to CETA, the service level agreement that's there with CETA is for transversal systems. So that's BAS, TESAL, and LOGIS. It doesn't touch the systems that are being used as facilities. Unless if there are negotiations with CETA to say maybe they will need to take up this the systems that are being used facilities. But currently, the service level agreement that's there is only for transversal systems, the financial systems, and not the systems that are used for service delivery. Okay. Then there was one question with regards to common patient record. From National Department, they have a project where they are implementing health patient record system. They've started piloting. They've piloted at 50 sites across the province, and this year they're going to go to the next phase where they are piloting at 1,200 sites and see what's working. The process they said they are following is they will start at the 50 sites because they want to see what are the challenges that they are facing so that when they go to the next phase, they use lessons learned from the first 50 sites to the next phase. But there is a project in place to make sure that
there is one common patient record across the provinces. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Chairperson. I think, luckily for me, I don't have the handwriting of a doctor, but at least from the notes that I've written down, Chairperson, it seems that I've covered most of the comments, Chairperson. There was just, I think, in closing, the issue that was relating to the pharmaceutical system, the recommendations are in the pharmaceutical performance audit report, which we issued last week or discussed last week, and then the commitments therein as well. And then there was one also on the maintenance of, you know, I think the member actually made more of a comment and answered herself by saying maybe we should look at the performance measures. What is management's role in making sure those people are actually working on site in that regard? And then Chairperson asked a question in closing with regards to the entire report in the sense that we've only included pictures with negative reporting and maybe we should consider including pictures with positive reporting. I think the comments I noted, Chairperson, we'll look at it certainly in future, but I think it's just by its very nature of the beast, you know, auditing being the, when we audit, you find something, you report what you have found, and more often than not, what you have found is negative. But we try and give positive feedback by, at least in the bars, you see the provinces that are doing well, we acknowledge by giving the green, maybe not the pictures of the hospital, but it's certainly something that we've noted in terms of your comment, Chairperson. Chairperson, with that being said, I hope that we've addressed all the comments, queries, and questions that we received, and we thank you once again for the opportunity to have engaged you today.
No, thank you very much. I think we have been all our questions and concerns have been addressed. I'm looking into members by indication, there is nothing that suggests that there is something that has been left behind. I do think that, again, it is not just about coming and making a presentation. It's about how best do we, because after this, we have to, as the committee, see how then do we ensure that we balance what is on paper and when we then go and make a visit. So that we are then taking leadership of that particular institution or that particular province to task in terms of then this was reported to us at a particular time, you were audited at a particular time, why are things like that? Because at the end, health, it's not about high powered. Well, there's a time for high powered academic and sophisticated language. People on the ground, they're not interested in high-powered English. Health, it's about coming to an institution at 7:30, leave the latest at 9:00, period. Get tablets, go home. Addressed by a porter or a clerk, and a health worker that is given food by a person who's supposed to do that, an institution that is clean, and that is that. You will be so surprised calls that you received from ordinary people. Because all this to them doesn't matter. What matters the most, you wouldn't understand therefore that. And I will always say it until the end of this term, if I'm still in this committee. If you have never been in the court face of health sector, you will think that some of the questions are just questions that are not relevant. What is key, it's that interaction. So this assists us therefore to say, but how do we have students that are sitting in such a... I was a student myself. I was sitting in a more comfortable... Yes, I was not happy with a little bit of this and that, but it was... I'm just making that example. So these the questions, and I want to make it clear, questions that are asked, take them seriously. they may be trivial, maybe. They may be a bit there. They may, the English may not be right. It is the content. Your brief is to pick up the content. If you don't understand the content, feel free to say, can you repeat? We are not here, well, English is a Queen's language, fine, we're expected to be polished, but not all of us are that. What is important, it is then the sector servicing our people. And all our concerns are about, we're talking about a sector that has got history. Not the only sector that hasn't got, that has got history, but this sector has got history. And some of us are coming from that history. And all the programs that are developed by the Department of Health and the policies that are developed by the leading, by the majority party, it's not about anything else, but it's about addressing that history. And obviously, there will be mistakes. I am not justifying that people build clinics without any specifications that are, not justifying that. But I'm trying to say, as people are trying to address a particular problem, they are bound to make mistakes. And it's our responsibility, all of us. And history is unfortunate that at times when we're politicians, but I always say, health, TB doesn't have any political affiliation. HIV doesn't have any political affiliation. Mental health doesn't have any political affiliation. All of us here, irrespective of our political parties and our policies, in the center is that we want our people that have asked us to be here assisted by you.
Madam Chair, just on the point of order, are you suggesting that we are all equally mentally deficient?
I was told that there's a very thin line between sanity and insanity. Very thin line. And none of us here can be confident that at one point it can so. So thank you very much. I think it's becoming more clearer. What I want also to comment is that it's reader friendly. Remember, this is a public document. It's reader friendly. People who may have come here who then have understand what exactly your brief. We will at times bear with us. We will tend to ask questions that we're supposed to ask to the department. Bear with us. It's not because of anything else. It's because of the passion and the panic. So thank you very much. I would, my apologies, honorable members, I didn't read the apology of Honorable Imam Sheikh, who is in the police the portfolio committee. Thank you very much. The meeting is stand adjourned until we meet again. There are no announcements. Not yet. Thank you very much, Honorable.